Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Well, hello. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton of the International Culinary Center, and we're here today on Chef's Story with the great chef Jonathan Benno. And I can't wait to start interviewing Jonathan. And one of my big questions in my mind about Jonathan is why he isn't a household name already. In our culinary world, you know, in the professional world, he's one of the giants of chefs. And right now, he is the executive chef and really chef de cuisine. He's in there all the time, lunch and dinner. I see him because if you walk down 65th Street in New York, you can look up and see that fantastic kitchen of Lincoln at Lincoln Center. It's an extraordinary restaurant. I think it's one of the most beautiful restaurants in New York City. If you're coming to New York City, you have to go there. But more importantly, it was named the number one of the 10 best new restaurants in America by Alan Richman for GQ. And he also called it, if you know Alan, he's a curmudgeon. He's the most decorated food writer in America. But he called it America's most intelligent Italian restaurant. And it truly is. Now, where did Jonathan Benno come from? I mean, and to create the most intelligent Italian restaurant? Well, if you didn't know, he was the opening chef of Per Se for Thomas Keller from 2006, I think, and for 6 years. Or no, it was probably before that. And he was named a rising star chef by starchefs.com. And when he was at Per Se, he received a 4-star review from the New York Times on its opening. In 2005, he got the highest ranking new entry in London's Restaurant Magazine and 7th restaurant in the world. He got best new restaurant from the James Beard Award, 3-star Michelin ratings. I could go on. Jonathan Benno, the gentle giant of the food world. Welcome.
Well, thank you.
Well, it's really great to finally get you here at Roberta's. I got him here with a pizza. So let's start. I mean, tell me, where did you grow up? And, you know, what were your first, how did you enter into the food world here? What were your first food memories?
I grew up in Southbury, Connecticut, which is a small town right in the center of the state, in a series of the Barrys there along Interstate 84. And growing up, Southbury was, you know, predominantly farms. I mean, the where my folks' house is at the time, you know, growing up was surrounded by farms. And early food memories. You know, I was lucky enough to grow up at a time and in a family where, you know, we sat down for dinner, you know, every night at 5:30 when my dad got home from work, and the extended family, grandmothers, you know, aunts and uncles would kind of come together on, you know, Sundays for supper and holidays.
What kind of food?
American food.
What was your favorite dish growing up?
My grandmother on my father's side was really the cook in the family. And you know, she's Italian heritage, and so I remember, you know, her eggplant parmesan, her kind of version of chicken cacciatore. She was a tremendous baker, so her cakes and cookies and pies, you know, those are my earliest food memories.
So I know you went to CIA. So what drew you to go to culinary school, and what was your vision for yourself at that time?
When I was in high school, I kind of fell into the restaurant business. I went to high school with one of my classmates. His brother owned, and I believe he and his wife still own, a little restaurant in Oxford, Connecticut called the Oxford House. And I was 15. I remember my mom had to drive me to work and pick me up, because obviously I didn't have my driver's
Good
license
mom.
Yet. And I started, you know, a few nights a week washing dishes and peeling potatoes at the Oxford House restaurant in Oxford, Connecticut, and worked in restaurants through high school. I didn't really know what I wanted to do when I left high school. I knew I didn't want to go to college.
Were you working in the restaurant in high school for money or because you liked being around food?
I liked money. There was a little of it to be had. But I also, you know, at that age, you know, 15, 16, 17, I liked being out of the house at night. And
honest answer.
restaurant work was somewhat of a legitimate way to get out of the house.
Okay, so there wasn't this burning desire to be a chef.
It really had nothing to do with, or very little to do with the passion for cooking. Right. You know, it was getting out of the house and making a little bit of extra money, and you know, at the time, you know, hanging out with older guys and drinking beer, and you know.
I love it.
I was corrupted early.
Mm-hmm. All right. So then, when did you go to the CIA? How old were you?
Well, I left high school and with no idea what I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to get out of Southbury, Connecticut, and so I moved out to Hawaii.
Oh.
And I took my first job out there was at the Hard Rock Cafe in Honolulu. And this was...
Wait, what made you from Connecticut choose Hawaii?
Another...
That's the other side of the world.
Another friend who grew up out there and said to me, you know, why don't you come out for the summer and work, and, you know, you can stay at my mom's house. His mother still lives out there. And her... My friend's name is Brendan. His mom, Sheila Donnelly, was actually a very, very prominent public relations person for hotels and restaurants in the Pacific at the time. And one of her accounts was the Hard Rock Cafe. And so she got me a job there. I had, you know, I had a little bit of restaurant experience. And so, you know, I was 18 years old and I was working at the Hard Rock Cafe in Honolulu. And that seemed...
In the kitchen.
Pretty cool, yeah.
You had a lot of fun. I can tell by the smile on your face. You had a lot of fun.
Maybe had a little too much fun.
So what brought you back from Honolulu?
Well, I lived there for about 2.5 years, and
did you surf?
No, you don't. Yeah, you don't pick up
the local.
coming from Southbury, Connecticut to Honolulu, Hawaii. You don't pick up surfing it.
Did you at least get a tan?
At 18 or 19, I spent a lot of time at the beach.
Okay,
watching people surf.
Okay.
And it was in Hawaii where I realized that I really wanted to pursue this as a career, that I wanted to become a chef. Like, I started taking it more seriously, and I worked for about a year at the Hard Rock Cafe. I worked at a fine dining restaurant called the Black Orchid, and then I worked on the cruise ships for a while as well. And then this was right about the time, long story short, this was right about the time the Gulf War started and mm-hmm. travel came to a screeching halt. So mm-hmm. I got laid off of the cruise ships and I found myself in Hawaii with a duffel bag and a little bit of money in my pocket. Mm-hmm. I remember I called my father up and I said, listen, you know, I'm thinking about moving back home. And he said, all right, when? I was like, well, I was going to go to the airport right now. So I'm moving back home right now. And then I came back to Connecticut, and that was when I, you know, enrolled. I got into the CIA and I enrolled in the CIA.
That's great. So then what was your journey like when you graduated?
I did my externship at the Greenbrier Resort in West Virginia. And through that job, I got a job when I went back to school at the Mayflower Inn in Washington, Connecticut,
working for a
chef named John Farnsworth. And he was really the first mentor, mm-hmm. I guess. Mm-hmm. And when I finished school, I was still working at the Mayflower Inn, and he said to me, you know, you grew up here, like you. It's time to go. Like, you got to go, mm-hmm. go, you know, pick somewhere, New York, Chicago, San Francisco, like, just go somewhere and work. And San Francisco.
So the fine dining really came in after, at the CIA, at the Greenbrier. Wait, what was your mindset when you were at the CIA? Did you say, I want to go out there and be the best chef in the world? What was a young student's mind like that then?
You know, I wanted to, and I still do, I wanted to learn as much as I could at that time. And, you know, I still feel that. Mm-hmm. I still feel that way today. I didn't really choose my path. Mm-hmm. In other words, I didn't have in my mind that I wanted to go to New York City and work for Daniel Ballou at Le Cirque.
I see.
Because I remember New York was certainly an option, but I was really scared of New York. Mm-hmm. Like, for some reason, moving out to San Francisco with no place to mm-hmm. live and no job seemed more,
easier.
I don't know, seemed easier than moving to big bad New York. And I don't know why, but that was my decision, to move to San Francisco with no job and no place to live. And
you did that.
I did that, and I was, you know, I found a place to live very easily. And I was lucky enough to kind of walk in the back door of Aqua Restaurant, and, you know, Michael Mina, you know, hired me on the spot.
Wow. Was that because of your education, breeding at Mayflower?
It had nothing to do with me. It had everything to do with, you know, an hour before, I think he had thrown the garmage guy out of the restaurant and needed someone to make salads that night.
Okay, so now, what was it like working at Aqua? And was it different from the Mayflower or from the East Coast, West Coast cooking?
People always say that, you know, Aqua was like a New York restaurant in San Francisco. And it was really, Aqua was like the first really kind of big, high profile, busy, really, really hard place to work. I remember that being one of the hardest jobs I ever had in my career.
Really?
Because at that time, Aqua was, you know, probably one of the hottest
restaurants
in the country, and it was packed every day for lunch and for dinner, and it was a small kitchen doing, you know, very, very ambitious food, and it was really, really busy, really, really intense.
How long did you stay?
I was there for about a year and a half.
And you got out of garde manger, I take it. And that's like the appetizer prep station, if you're listening out there.
I was lucky enough to kind of work my way the hard way around the different stations in the kitchen. And there was a sous chef there, a guy named Mark LaRusso, who had worked for Thomas Keller at Checkers in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And about a year and a half into Aqua, you know, Mark, I became friends with Mark, and he really, he took good care of me there. And he said to me, like, listen, you're really, like, you've worked all the stations.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's time for you to go find mm-hmm. another job.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I think you should, you know, I think you should go up and trail with a chef that I used to work for in Los Angeles, Thomas Keller, who's opening a restaurant in Napa Valley. And I think it's going to be pretty special. Mm-hmm. I remember Mark saying, like, I think you'll really get along with Thomas.
Mm.
And so I had a motorcycle at the time, and I remember driving my motorcycle up there and trailing for a day. And you know, the chef said, thank you very much. You know, we're just getting started. You know, I'll be sure to call you when we need somebody. And it was, you know, a few weeks went by, and you know, the chef called Mark and said, listen, you know, I'm ready. I can take John now. Like, when can you let him go? And I finished up at Aqua, and I, you know, moved up to Napa, and you know, I started as a commis.
How long had French Laundry been open by that time?
It had been open probably for about 6 months when I got there.
Wow. Okay, well, we're going to take a little break here, and when we come back, we're going to get on that chapter of your life's journey. Thanks, Jonathan.
Grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Well, welcome back. This is Chef's Story with Dorothy Cann Hamilton, and today my guest is Jonathan Benno, the executive chef of Lincoln at Lincoln Center in New York City. And we're just tiptoeing through his life here, and we just finished by saying he took a job at the newly opened French Laundry in Napa Valley, in Yountville. And Jonathan, welcome back. And so tell me, what was it like in the first 6 months of the French Laundry up in Napa Valley?
When you look at the kitchenette per se today, you look at the kitchen at the French Laundry, Bouchon, you know, all the remarkable things that the chef has done in the course of the past 20 years, the French Laundry, and it reminds me, Roberta's kind of reminds me a little bit of where we started at the French Laundry.
Really?
And I have a bunch of old photographs of the French Laundry from 20 years ago kind of stuck into my first copy of the French Laundry cookbook. And the very first, the original kitchen at the French Laundry was where the salon or reception area of the restaurant is today. And it was literally a wooden table in the center of a small room with two stoves, and the chef and Ron Siegel. The chef was the meat cook. Ron was the fish cook. There was one person on the garmage, and there was one person in the pastry. And I worked in the morning doing prep with mm-hmm. another guy actually Amy Sherber's brother.
Really?
John and I. The chef would like, you know, he'd start, you know, pointing at the clock at 4:45.
Now, the chef we're talking about is Thomas Keller.
Right.
And I think it's really great that you refer to him as the chef.
He's been the chef for 20 years. He'll always be the chef. He would chase us out of there. He'd make us clean and chase us out of there at 5 o'clock. We'd have to, like, finish prep, like, on the, you know, outside the restaurant because, you know, guests were coming and service was beginning at 5:30.
And they needed the space.
They needed the space because that wooden prep table became, you know, the pass mm-hmm. during the service. Mm.
That's so you were working really hand to hand with Thomas Keller and the other chefs there. What was the food like in the very beginning?
It was, you know, if you look at the French Laundry cookbook,
that was from day one.
That was the food. You know, the menu was much I always joke with the chef that, you know, when he hired me, he started the tasting menu at the French Laundry, and that had nothing to do with my culinary ability at the time, but it had everything to do with, you know, having an extra set of hands to prep during the day to do the mise en place necessary to do the tasting menu.
Was the restaurant immediately successful, or did some nights you sit there twiddling your thumbs praying they would come?
I think that hard time was in the very, very beginning. By the time I got there, the restaurant was full most
evenings, and it had already started with its reputation. So you didn't stay there. Let's get, because you're going to circle back with the Thomas Keller group. How long were you there, and then where did you go?
I worked there for about a year, and during that year, the chef built an addition to the restaurant, which is where the kitchen is today. Mm-hmm. So we went from this tiny little kitchen to a larger kitchen that enabled him to do lunch mm-hmm. at the French Laundry as well. And then I started getting restless in Napa, and the chef was able to get me a job at with Daniel Boulou at
Daniel.
The original Daniel, where Café Boulou is today.
Mm-hmm. Oh, back then. And who was the chef? Andrew was there?
That was a pretty remarkable, that was a pretty stellar team. You know, it was mm-hmm. like the Yankees, because it was Chef Danielle was at the pass every day for lunch and dinner, right. And then it was Alex Lee.
Oh, Alex Lee.
Riyad right. Nasser.
Oh, Riyad at Balthazar.
Lee Hansen.
Lee Hansen, Balthazar.
And Philippe Bertrandeau.
Oh, my gosh.
So there was those five guys at the pass. Oh. And you talked about the segment that you did with Michael Anthony earlier. Yeah. I stood, Michael cooked fish.
Oh, no.
At lunch, and I stood right behind him on the Garmager station.
Oh, my God. I always told Danielle he ran the graduate school, you know, the Harvard Business School of cooking.
There are a lot of alums. Really, really talented people that came out of that kitchen.
Really? So, and then where did you go?
And then I went to work for Christian Delouvier at the Les Célébrités in the Essex House Hotel.
He's a brilliant chef.
Yeah, that was a great time. Mm-hmm. Really, really small kitchen. Obviously,
very French.
Very
French.
Très Française. Was, you know, a small little luxury jewel box in a hotel.
Now, did Danielle tell you to go there and arrange that for you? No, no. No. Can I ask about?
He told me not to go there.
oh, really? So why did you?
For a lot of different reasons.
I mean, Christian had an amazing reputation and delicious food.
Yeah, and it was a special plate, like those luxury restaurants and hotels, they don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And you know, the ingredients that he was bringing in, and it was a special little place.
Okay. So then where did you go
for? And then I went to go work for Tom Colicchio at Gramercy Tavern.
My gosh, this is like, you know. So, and Gramercy Tavern, and it was based in those days, was as product sensitive or technique sensitive? Because Tom, I think, more in terms of technique, and Michael Anthony, now the chef there, I think has the technique, but is very product sensitive too.
Yeah, but it was both. Mm-hmm. 15 years ago. I mean, mm-hmm. Modesto Batista, who's still the head steward, doesn't do his role justice. Mm-hmm. But he, you know, 15 years ago, he was rolling the carts down to the green market and coming back with produce. Mm-hmm. 15 years ago, you know, whole rabbits and lambs and, you know, rack of veal were coming in the back door at Gramercy Tavern.
Wait a minute. So this is sounding to me like living in London, being a musician with Beatles and the Rolling Stones, and, you know, it's just the hottest people on earth. And it you know, it sounds, being in New York with all of these colleagues and cooks. What did it feel like? Did you go out drinking afterwards? What did you talk about?
Never. There were never out drinking. There were never drugs. It was just, you know, 100%. I'm kidding. Focused on cuisine. No, it was really, you know.
Did you know these guys were going to be incredible like yourself?
I knew they were incredible at the time, and could only believe that, you know, that they were going to go out and do, you know, remarkable things.
Yeah. Yeah, just a little side note on the drugs and the drinking. You know, when Tony Bourdain's book came out, Kitchen Confidential, and it looked like, you know, just one free rock and roll ride the whole time, Jacques Pepin said to me, "Are you kidding?" He said, you know, yes, people do that, but they don't survive. Cooking is such a hard physical day in, day out work that you can only do that when you're very young.
Yeah,
if you want to survive in this industry, you got to straighten out pretty soon.
You can get away with it for a little while when you're younger, but you're right. You can't sustain that lifestyle and manage
just, a brilliant
just,
career.
Not just your personal life, but your career.
Career, yeah. So okay, so now Gramercy Tavern, how long were you there? What was your position?
I worked there for about 2.5 years. I was lucky enough to kind of move through the stations in the kitchen, and I was really lucky to spend a year with Claudia Fleming in the pastry kitchen.
Oh, the pastry. I love her. I love her desserts. Yeah.
And yeah, still, that would really, not that, you know, I work service for, I was able to do production for a little while, but I work service for most of the time. But for, you know, for a chef to have that experience and just a, you know, kind of a fundamental, you know, basic knowledge of pastry production and service. I'm so glad that I had that opportunity. And most importantly, that opportunity to work pastry a year with Claudia.
Absolutely. So, but after that, you went to Kraft as sous chef, and then you made full circle back to French Laundry.
Yeah, I was a sous chef at Kraft with, you know, working for Tom and Marco. David Chang was a reservationist there at the time.
No, really?
Yeah, that was how he got his foot in the door. You know, Marco said no, you know, so many times, and David, being as stubborn as he is, wouldn't take no for an answer. So he was either going to FCI at the time or had just finished FCI, and took a part-time job as a reservationist just to get his foot in the door, prove Marco wrong. And then, you know, he found his way into the kitchen, and
fantastic.
You know, the rest is history.
Is history. So, you know, let's get back to how you got back to the French Laundry, because, you know, you eventually became the opening chef of Per Se. And one of the quotes from Thomas Keller that I just find spectacular is, and this is Thomas speaking, "Whenever I look at one of Jonathan's dishes at Per Se, I immediately feel a connection to it, even if I didn't create it. I see a lot of myself in him, actually. That drive, that ambition, that quality of workmanship, and his modesty. I think modesty is so important. I think if any of our listeners out there, you're listening to this, Jonathan just keeps deflecting, you know, all the greatness, but he is the gentle giant of a chef here. What was it like? Why did you go back to the French Laundry? And what was it like? And how did you become the opening chef of Per Se? And we're going to have to break in a couple of minutes. So why don't you just tell us how you got back to the French Laundry? And when we come back, we'll see what your defining vision was for Per Se.
There was an article in the New York Times announcing the project at Time Warner. And I remember there was a photograph of Jean-Georges and the chef in hard hats looking at Columbus Circle. And I remember seeing the article, and I called the chef and I said, "Listen, you know, I would really like the opportunity to work with you again if
you come back to New York.
When the restaurant in New York opens." And he said, "You know, thank you. Let's talk about it some more." And we talked about it some more for about, I don't know, 6 months, probably 6 months to a year. And then, he invited me back to work at the French Laundry, to prove myself, to see if I was the right candidate to open Per Se.
So what was your position at the French Laundry when you went back?
Butcher, baker, candlestick maker. I did a little bit of everything for the first year, and then kind of assumed the role of a sous chef. I was doing the fish order. I was expediting the lunch service.
As sous chef.
As sous chef.
Thomas was the chef?
Thomas was the chef. Eric Siebold, chef de cuisine.
Okay, and then you as sous chef.
Gregory Short, myself, and Mark Hopper. That was the team. Mm-hmm. Sebastian Ruxell, the pastry chef.
Mm. Great. Okay, well, we're going to take a break here. We're going to come back and talk about Per Se.
HeritageRadioNetwork.org is the most trusted media outlet for real, quality conversations about food. That experience will come to life at our first annual members-only fundraiser party on September 9th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Enjoy the best food in the world from talent including Michael Anthony, award-winning chef from Gramercy Tavern, Brooks Headley, award-winning pastry chef from Del Posto, Shauna Pacifico at Back 40 West, sustainable seafood from sea to table, and much more, including drinks made by Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues, craft beer from Greenpoint Harbor Brewery, wine from Cane Vineyard and Winery in the Napa Valley, and plenty more. Radio is back, and this will be a special, exclusive experience in the back garden of Roberta's that you don't want to miss. September 9th, 5 to 8 p.m. Buy tickets at heritageradionetwork.eventbrite.com.
Well, welcome back. This is Dorothy Cann Hamilton, and you're listening to Chef Story. And today, my guest is Jonathan Benno, the executive chef of Lincoln Restaurant at Lincoln Center in New York City. And we're talking about his journey there. And we are just getting back to when he has become the opening chef of Per Se in New York City. So, Jonathan, tell us. So you spent your years at the French Laundry, and Chef Thomas Keller thought, okay, you could do it. How did he come to you? What were your thoughts going through your mind? And what was it? What was your vision for Per Se?
We, you know, the team that opened that restaurant, Per Se, I guess the goal the goal was, and I believe the goal still is today, you know, to bring that level of, you know, product-driven refinement that is so special about the French Laundry to New York.
So it's different from the French Laundry.
Well, it's different in that, you know, the French Laundry is a beautiful little farmhouse, you know, amidst the vineyards of Napa Valley. I mean, Per Se is this massive restaurant in, you know, the Time Warner Center, you know, that looks out over Central Park.
So when Food and Wine named you Best New Chef in 2006, the quote was, because he prepares clever, indulgent food that complements his boss, Thomas Keller's, but is completely his own. So tell me, how did you collaborate with, did Chef just let you create your dishes? Did you have to take him in mind? You were the head of the kitchen. You were there day to day. He wasn't.
I was the head of the kitchen. You know, I was the chef de cuisine at Per Se for 6 years. And I was, you know, I was surrounded by really, really talented people. And, you know, any team, you know, it's not just about Tom Brady. It's about the Patriots, right? It's about the coach, Bill Belichick. So, you know, I'm a big Patriots fan, so I had to get that. I had to get that in there. So I had, you know, my coach. I had Thomas Keller. I was the chef de cuisine. But I also had, you know, guys like Corey Lee in the beginning to help, you know, drive this thing.
Oh, who made the menu?
We did.
As a team. But you were the leader. So
then,
if there was a play you didn't like, you struck it out. And if there was a play you thought you should play. So where did you come down? Because it was your cuisine. And you're doing your cuisine at Lincoln, a very different restaurant. But where did it start forming? When did you feel your comfort level?
I think when we got through the review process and things kind of settled and the restaurant started to run, you know, an aspect of Per Se that a lot of people really don't know about is that restaurant also has, you know, private dining room for 75.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we ran the the 15 table dining room up front, but we also had this private dining room for 75 that, you know, was very, very busy. So it was a really, that restaurant is a monster. It's really big and busy, and there's a lot happening. You know, there's even more happening there today with, you know, Bouchon Bakery.
Oh, that's
on
right.
The floor below.
Mm-hmm. And they have that cafe outside. Okay, so when did Jonathan Benno's cuisine? Because let's get on to Lincoln, because I want to get into your cuisine. Lincoln is a very extraordinary. What did Alan Richman mean by intelligent Italian food? Tell me what your cuisine is today.
He was being very, very generous.
Yeah.
The goal, I think, at Lincoln is to take a very traditional cuisine, and that is Italian cuisine, and bring it to, you know, a very, very modern, very dynamic setting at, you know, Lincoln Center. You know, there's a lot going on. You know, just that restaurant is in a very, very unique location in that, you know, this is the first time that I've ever worked at a restaurant that did, you know, a full turn, quote, pre-theater, you know, before 7:30. A normal service between 7:30 and 10 o'clock. Mm. And then, you know, on a lot of nights, like a post-theater seating.
Crowd. So tell me about one dish at the restaurant now that reflects you.
Or
that you love. I'm sure you love them all.
Yeah, I like all the dishes. So we started, well, there's two really. And one of them is we do a, you know, we didn't serve a lot of pasta at the French Laundry and per se, but one kind of signature pasta that the chef has always done is agnolotti from Piedmont. You know, the chef was there and spent some time in kitchens there a while back and has always done agnolotti. So, like, nostalgia, like, that pasta shape has great significance for me. And the general manager of the restaurant, Paolo Novello, is from Piedmont. So there's a connection there. And I've been lucky enough to go to Piedmont a couple of times with him. So we do a corn agnolotti, which is a variation on a corn agnolotti that we did at the French Laundry in Per Se with summer truffles and stracciatella that we make at the restaurant. So that's a great a dish that I'm very, very proud of. And, you know, obviously you put corn, summer truffles, and stracciatella together. Very, very popular at the restaurant. And another dish that we're actually going to start doing again, we just started doing a regional, choosing a region of Italy and doing three or four dishes from that region. And it's kind of in a separate area of the rest of the menu. And we're doing Calabria now. So we have four dishes from Calabria. And one of them is a kind of a grilled piece of swordfish that's stewed in tomatoes with capers and olives. Mm. So we buy in the loin of swordfish and, you know, we kind of take the belly off of the swordfish and then we brine it, and then we kind of rub it with like a pretty traditional pastrami rub, juniper, coriander, black pepper. And we're actually going to start serving it tonight with pickled green tomatoes and purslane and a bunch of summery green market things. So, you know, that's one, you know, really proud of the regional dishes. And then, you know, taking, you know, being a smart cook, a smart chef, you know, taking a lesser cut of something like the swordfish belly, and then doing something, coming up with something really special to do with that.
Right. So did you, when you went to Lincoln, did they say to you, the Patina group you're working with now, did they say what kind of cuisine? Because with the word Lincoln, it could be anything. I mean, you don't put Italian food in. It's basically an Italian restaurant. You know, it's an Italian menu. Did you always want to do an Italian menu? You didn't work. You worked at all these French restaurants. How did Italian come about? And has this been something you've always wanted to do?
About 4 or 5 years into Per Se, you know, I started thinking about what's next or what could possibly be next. And I've always been really passionate about Italian food. My wife has worked for Joe and Mario on and off for,
Mario Batali,
over 10 years.
Babbo, yeah,
I mean,
and
she,
all of this. Yeah.
She opened Babbo. And then came to work with us at Kraft. That's where we met. She, you know, just recently left Italy. So
to be the mother of your two children.
Yeah, we have for a really hard job to be the mother of our two daughters. And, you know, we always joke that, you know, she's a better Italian cook than I am because of her, you know, her background. I've always loved Italian cuisine. I've always loved going to Italy, you know, the people, the different places that I've been.
So when you made the leap from Per Se to Lincoln, was it because you could do Italian food, or what, it was time to go out on your own?
I felt it was time. Although there are times when I miss you know, I was we did an I did an event a while back with Missy Robbins, and we were talking, and you know, she left Spiaggia to come to New York, mm-hmm. and she really said it best. You know, she said, you know, there are times when I really miss having a mentor, and you know, I feel the same way at times. You know, there are times when I really miss having Thomas Keller, you know, standing behind me, or having, you know, or you know, picking up the phone and you know, touching base with him as we would often do, mm-hmm. when I was at Per Se. I knew I wanted to do something different. I knew that I would be measured by Per Se, and I really wanted to do Italian, you know,
to focus on
Italian food.
To be, you know, the best new Italian restaurant in the country by Alan Richman, and intelligent Italian food. You are making your mark, and you're making, you know, you talk so modestly about, you know, your swordfish, but it is so different. Your agnolotti is so light. It's like putting pillows in your mouth. I mean, the execution is extraordinary. And you sit here like, oh, well, it's, you know, just the next step. I think this foment around you of greatness, and it comes across so gently. I don't want our listeners out there to mistake that for there's this incredible passionate cuisine coming out of your hands and your taste. And I think everyone, if you haven't been to Lincoln, you really have to get there. So we're going to have to end pretty soon, but I have to ask you, you know, are you going to just stay in Italian cuisine? I mean, you have so much ability. I'm not talking about, now he's not leaving Lincoln or anything like that, but in the future, 5-10 years from now, is there something in the back of your mind saying, you know, one day I will?
One day I will. You know, being a chef, being a cook, you know, is an evolution. And, you know, I remember working at the Oxford House restaurant in Connecticut, washing dishes and watching the two chefs cook, and I was amazed at how many different things they would touch during the course of a day and how many different things that they would do. And I still feel that way today. I still feel like there's a lot I have to learn, and there's a lot of things that I still want to do, and there's just not, you know, there's just not enough time in the day.
So if I could say, Jonathan, I'm going to babysit the kids, you take your wife Elizabeth, and I will put you down anywhere for a meal tonight, in anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Well, I'll definitely take you up on the offer to babysit, but you know, you were able to lure me out to Bushwick with, you know, the promise of spending, you know, part of the afternoon with you, but also, you know,
eating a pizza,
the opportunity to eat at Roberta's, which I'm embarrassed to say I haven't done so yet. Uh-huh. So, you know, I'm sorry that my wife isn't here, and I may catch hell for coming here without her, but I'm glad that, you know, we were able to do this, and I'm glad that, you know, I was able to get a lunch at Roberta's.
I don't want to end this on this note, but you are a cheap date if this is the only place I have. And I would say it's a world class restaurant. Well, let me say once again, Jonathan Benno is a gentle giant of a chef in our profession. And Lincoln is one of the great new restaurants in New York City. If you haven't been there, you have to get there and eat this really delicious, very, very unique Italian food. And I want to thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you.
And let's go eat the pizza. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.